again, remind council, if you have not signed in, please sign in either for or after you do your argument. The next case we have is Justin Friedrichs and Erica Brown. Ms. Owens?
I'm Ms. Owens, I'm Ms. Michelson.
Ms. Michelson, Ms. Owens.
And Your Honor, I'm Nancy Quinn, the guardian ad litem in the case.
You wish to be heard?
No, Your Honor, I have actually submitted a statement saying that I support the argument of Mrs. Brown.
But you do have a right to be heard orally if you wish.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't expect to, though. Thank you.
Okay. And Ms. Michelson, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
I would. There's 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Okay. All right. And whatever suits you.
May it please the court. I am Claire Michelson, and I represent the father in this case, Justin Friedrichs. This is an appeal from a case in the Chesterfield Circuit Court on father's motion for an amendment of visitation and or a motion for an amendment of custody. Father filed his original petitions in the juvenile court and noted his appeal in a timely fashion and was reheard on the motions in the circuit court, and this was in last September. The evidence that the father presented at the trial was that there was a material change in circumstances of the parties and the children, which warranted a change in either visitation or custody.
Ms. Michelson, what's the material change in circumstances?
Well, in this case, the material change that he presented was evidence that the children had developmentally changed, that his relationship...
Developmentally, they've actually improved.
Exactly, Your Honor. They had improved in many ways. And he also put on evidence that there were positive changes in his relationship with the children as a result of getting able to spend more time. There had been an order entered previously in January of 2014 granting him more time with the children than he had had before. And the evidence showed as a result of more time with the children, he was able to, they were improving, his relationship with them was improving, and his relationship with their step family was improving. He also put on evidence that the mother would not cooperate with him.
Let me ask you about that. When you say would not cooperate, she basically would not acquiesce to changes he wanted made or things that he wanted done. And didn't the trial court find that these parties had never really gotten along, that it wasn't that they were cooperating and then all of a sudden stopped cooperating?
Yes, Your Honor. The judge did specifically find that this had been a problem, an ongoing problem for them. He had requested that the parties be ordered to go to co-parenting counseling to fix this problem, and the court made a decision that that they had already tried that and that wasn't going to work anymore.
Right. So my question is, how is it a change in circumstance if they weren't cooperating and they're still not cooperating?
Well, Your Honor, that's a really interesting question. I actually look at it as sort of adultery, for example. If a party commits adultery one time and then it's condoned, then, you know, it's forgiven. But if you do it again, then it has recreated the problem. So it seems to me that if a party continues to refuse to cooperate with the other parent once they've gained custody, that every time they do it, it is a change of circumstances because they should be required to change their behavior. The court should hold them to a standard of cooperation with the other parent. They should be prohibited.
If they violate a court order, then there are opportunities for things like rules to show cause, which your client filed a number of as well. Isn't that sort of the remedy there?
That is the remedy in the sense that they would have their wrists slapped for doing it, but that's about all that happens. When you file a show cause, they get a wrist slap. It doesn't change any future behavior unless they understand that, and if they're not going to be the cooperative parent, then the party that is the cooperative parent should be the custodial parent in a certain case. In fact, that's one of the factors in 20-124.3 specifically points out the ability of the parents to work together, the willingness of the parents to promote the relationship with the other parent. That's a very important factor.
Let me follow up on Judge O'Brien's question. I think we could all agree that change in circumstances can be either positive or negative.
Correct.
And simple change in circumstances isn't enough. It's got to be a material change in circumstances. In that vein, we held in the Sullivan case that the statutory requirement of a material change in circumstances, it does a couple of things. One, it deals with the statutory, I should say statutory, the judicial bar of res judicata. And also, it requires or it favors maintaining the status quo for the benefit of the children. In other words, the best interest of the children are really what drives whether a change in circumstances is material or not, correct?
Correct.
If you have a finding, given that there's a change in circumstances here, if you have a finding by the trial court that apparently you agree with, that the children have benefited from the status quo, given what we said in Sullivan, why? What would be the public policy that favors changing the status quo when the children are clearly benefiting from, you know? In other words, if it ain't broke, why are we trying to fix it? Let's put it in layman's terms here.
Well, the fact is, in this case, they had improved because of, they were improving because of the change that had already occurred, but they were continuing to improve. And I think continuing to improve is important. We don't want to just stop it. We don't want to say, okay, you've become a B student.
They're continuing to improve without the court doing anything. So why should the court step in and alter the landscape when the result might not be as beneficial as what it is at that moment?
Well, Your Honor, I think what's really important about what the trial court held in this case is that the factors that Keel specifically said do constitute a material change in circumstances, the judge in this case said they don't. The judge said developmental changes in children, not a change in circumstances. Positive changes in relationship with dad, not a change in circumstances.
The court was wrong about that. It was a change in circumstances.
And
is it a material change in circumstances that warrants changing the status quo? That's the question.
But in this particular case, the court never got to that. The court never even considered what was in the best interest of the children. They started out, the judge started out with the wrong test. The judge decided that what Keel says does constitute a material change isn't a material change. So in other words, no matter what evidence he put on about their developmental changes, whether it had been 10 years or 4 years or three, the judge was saying that doesn't count as a change in circumstances. She didn't say that he didn't prove that they had developmental changes. She just said, that's not what the law requires me to do. I don't find that to constitute a material change in spite of what Keel says. And that was the same thing she did with the positive changes in the relationship. I think if the court had...
Well, the Keel test is a two-part test.
Correct.
First of all, has there been a change? Second, would a change in custody be in the best interest of the children? This sort of reminds me of the situation, I don't know if you do a lot of criminal work, but we have in the criminal arena where everybody interprets the Fourth Amendment as granting a reasonable expectation of privacy. That's not actually what the case law says. That's just the shorthand version that we give it. It's actually similar to this, a two-part test, where one, do you have a subjective expectation of privacy? If the answer to that question is yes, you go to part two, which is the subjective expectation of privacy one that society as a whole would agree with? So we've elided that into reasonable expectation of privacy. It seems to me that's what the trial court did here in concluding that there was no change in circumstances, and granted that that's wrong in the abstract, the trial court could have simply been eliding to say that, you know, there's no material change in circumstances that will warrant disturbing the status quo.
Well, I think what Keel requires the court to do is, if those prongs are met, that it has been a change in circumstances, and the judge didn't say, again, that he didn't meet some of these, that she didn't say there wasn't a developmental change, and she didn't say there wasn't a positive change, just that is not considered, does not constitute a material change, and Keel does say it does. So I think what would have been appropriate in this case is she could have gone to the second prong and perhaps looked through the factors, 124.3, to determine if that change warranted a change in custody, if it would be in their best interest. And she may not have found that based on that, but she never even got to that step.
Well, help me understand why the trial court's, or I should say the circuit court's comments, if I can find them quickly here, I'll try it.
I believe they're on page 14 of the brief. I'm not sure if you're looking at that.
No, I'm looking at my notes here. The trial court made the observation that the children were developing well. In other words, there was no harm, that there was no detrimental effect. I'll put it this way, that there was no detrimental effect of the existing custody and visitation order vis-a-vis the welfare of the children. And that, therefore, they weren't, the trial court was not disposed to change anything. Now, I understand your argument that doesn't comport with Keel. But my point is, trial courts can be right for the wrong reason. And so if there is no evidence in the record that would support a change in the status quo because there is no obvious benefit to the children, it would be purely speculative, how that would be reversible error, even if the court erred in concluding, as it did, that there was no change in circumstances?
My thought is that the case should be reversed and remanded with instructions to the court to consider the best interest. And if the court is going to, this court may decide that Keel is wrong, that positive changes in the children and the relationship between the non-custodial parent and the parent is not a material change, but Keel says that it is. It specifically says that it is. And so to say that that isn't, now she could have said he didn't prove that there was a positive change, so therefore didn't meet that problem.
The court said the fact that Dan has developed a better relationship with his children because the court has granted you more time, sir, is not a material change in circumstances. That clearly was the court's intent, I guess meaning the court's previous intent, for you to have more time with your children and develop a closer bond with them through having more time with them. You can't come in here and say, because I've done that, that's a material change in circumstance. It's not. So it seems to me the trial court is clearly holding that it's not a material change in circumstances.
I think that she's holding that positive change doesn't constitute a change in circumstances. Again, her language says that. Yes. Correct. And so, you know, I think the confusion then for the litigant is, what does Keel mean? You know, if it says that positive changes constitute a change, then it either applies or it doesn't apply. It doesn't seem like the court can just decide, well, that actually doesn't apply. That isn't a material change anymore, despite what Keel says. And the court could have easily gone to best interest.
What's wrong with the logic granted, the court erred. Let's say the court erred in the first part of the Keel test.
Correct.
In concluding that this was not a change in circumstances. Mm-hmm. But in holding that it's not a material change in circumstances, and clearly in context, it's also concluding that a change is not in the best interest of the children. Why would that be error, even if the court erred in the first part of the Keel test?
I don't think it would have been error if she had gone to the second prong and looked at the best interest of the children and then made a determination that under these cases, she had the discretion to make that decision that it wasn't in their best interest to change it. But she never got to their best interest. She never even talked about their best interest. In fact, and the other thing that I think is a little disturbing is she said the fact that children are developing and getting older is not a material change in circumstances, not even close. I hope that all children that appear in cases that I touch are changing developmentally and getting older. That means she'll never believe that that's a material change in circumstances for any children who come in. Of course they're all going to change and develop.
What about the fact that she said the children are doing very well academically, very well physically, very well emotionally?
I'm sorry, am I running into my time?
I'm sorry. You are as a result of my question. So you can hold that.
Is that okay?
I'll make it easy for her. I'm going to ask the Chief Judge to give you some latitude, because I'd like to hear the answer to
the question. Okay. We'll stop the clock here. Let you answer my question.
That's never happened before. I appreciate it. I'm sorry. Can you rephrase your question?
Sure.
I'm sorry.
What about the fact that the trial judge said the children are makes the finding that the children are doing very well academically, very well physically, very well emotionally? Does that have any significance to you?
Well, the fact, if it means that they're doing so because that's a change in circumstances, it does mean something. If they are improving, that's a change in circumstances, and I think that's what this record shows, is those things that are happening to the children are an improvement. And father had gotten significantly more time with the children from the last order to the present order that we were stating there was a material change in circumstances. In January 2014, he gained a lot more time with the kids than he had before. He was keeping them after school and having significantly more time. However, there were also lots of issues in this visitation order in this case that there were just holes in it. There were places where the parties couldn't agree on what they could or couldn't do. But in this particular case, I think the fact that they improved from the first one to the second one because father was spending more time with them still constitutes a material change. Again, that doesn't leap to the next question, is it in the best interest to change them? But we just never got there in that case.
Okay. Well, now you're going to be in the rebuttal.
Okay.
Answer the question. But, okay, you're not going to save
it for a moment. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Mary Berkey Owens, and I'm counsel for Erica Brown. Been representing Ms. Brown for many years. I'm here today on behalf of Ms. Brown to argue that the trial court was correct in its findings. In this case, which essentially started in 2013, these parties had 2 days of testimony in the Circuit Court of Chesterfield. The judge ruled January 2014. 3 weeks after that ruling, father files a motion to show cause against mother. 4 months after the initial ruling in January 2014, father then files a motion to amend. And between that period, he files another show cause. Then he files another show cause. We have a pretrial order entered in June of 2014 with deadlines that we work to for the trial date. So all of us know about this pretrial order. We work to those deadlines. And then 5 days before our exhibits are due to be exchanged, father files yet another motion to amend. The issue in this case is the original motion to amend filed by father and his amended motion to amend, his first amended motion to amend, all reference the same issues. And those were that the trial judge... Yes, sir.
I think we can all agree that the trial court, or the circuit court's observation that these parties have never gotten along is accurate, certainly supported by the record. And clearly, appellate here has never been satisfied with the original disposition and has taken a lot of steps to try to remedy that. But that's essentially beside... I mean, it does provide some context, but it seems to me it's really beside the point insofar as whether or not the trial court erred in applying the proper standard here. And do you want to respond to your opponent's argument regarding the application of the Keel test here?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Keel versus Keel does set forth a two-prong test. First prong, obviously, you have to meet to show that there's been a material change in circumstances. Once you meet that, you leap to the second prong. In this case, material is the key. The judge considered the evidence, father's evidence, father's wife's evidence, and the neighbor's evidence. And the judge found that he had not met his burden of proof. All father said was the children were excelling. He admitted on cross they had been excelling at the time of the entry of the last order. They were excelling. Father now has the children after school for daycare. All of these things are not material. Simply because there's a positive change doesn't in and of itself make it material. You have to look at the totality of the circumstances to make a decision about whether or not changes in children's lives are material. And in this case, they were not. This is just continued litigation, which actually runs into the attorney's fees argument. But the judge looked at the issues, found they had one or two more activities, father spending more time with them. So naturally, their relationship with father has evolved. Those are all positive changes, but they do not rise to the level of material. And you have to contemplate the best interest of the children. How were they doing at the time? How were they doing at the time of this hearing in August of 2015? So simply because she said, I don't find they rise to the level of material, doesn't mean that she is saying positive changes in and of themselves cannot rise to the level of a material change in circumstances. The trial court was correct. It listened to the evidence, it heard it, and on my motion to strike, granted the motion to strike, looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to Mr. Friedrichs. But again, he didn't meet his burden of proof. If he doesn't meet his burden of proof, we don't get beyond the first prong, Your Honor. That first prong has to be met with material change in circumstances. This court's ruled Carpenter case, Britton case, Merritt versus Gray. All of the cases look at material change in circumstances. Otherwise, litigation would occur day in, day out for the same matters, much like this case. Father continues to file motions to amend because father's not satisfied with the rulings of the trial court. So this case is here on appeal because of that exact issue. These are the same matters father filed on in 2013, which is why I raised that to begin with. The trial judge listened to 2 days of evidence, ruled in January 2014. Father then recapitulates these motions to amend in 2014. They're heard by the juvenile case, appealed to the circuit court, heard by the circuit court. So some year and a half later, we're in circuit court, and there's still not a material change in circumstances. It's just increased the cost of litigation. My client's a single mother. She is the person who's bearing her expenses. The trial judge heard evidence, made a decision that he had not met his burden of proof, and as such, the trial judge struck the evidence and the motions to amend. So in cases, there can be positive and negative changes. And those can, and in this case, the judge found there was still a negative issue, and that is that the parents don't cooperate and don't get along well. They never have cooperated and gotten along well. So that's almost a flat issue. Luckily, it has not been to the detriment of the children. But father presented no evidence that he'd been denied time under the order for visitation with the children. And in fact, he admitted mother had offered him additional time. So father comes to court simply trying to bootstrap what he's already been granted and say, I've had the children more. They get along better with me now. They get along better with their step-sibs. So everything's better. So as a result of that factor, I should have custody of my children, primary custody of my children. These children were happy, healthy, thriving in January of 2014. When we went to court last summer, happy, healthy, thriving. Essentially, we have almost the same case. He could not present any evidence to show the court. That's why there aren't any negative things really that came up to the court beyond the fact that they don't cooperate and get along well. This is a case that's been litigated and relitigated and litigated and relitigated. And that really goes to the issue of the trial judge in this case. She made a proper decision, a correct decision. There was no abuse of discretion in her decision. She heard the evidence of the neighbor. She heard the evidence of the stepwife. She heard the evidence of Mr. Friedrichs. And she said, I don't find that it rises to the level of a material change in circumstances. She was absolutely correct. The trial judge was absolutely correct. It is simply a recapitulation of father's past frustrations with the court order and frustrations with being able to get more time from mother, work better with mother. But frankly, they don't get along. Yes, Your Honor.
Along those lines, in this case, Mr. Friedrichs filed a number of rules to show cause, etc. And what was the am I correct that all of those rules were dismissed in juvenile court and were not appealed?
That is correct. He only appealed the attorney's fees award from the juvenile court. There were three show causes that were filed. First one in February of 2014, immediately 3 weeks after the judge had ruled, saying mother won't let the children use electronic communication. Well, mother has the final decision-making authority in this case and has been granted that since 2010. She felt they were not mature enough and she was concerned about social media, did not want her children to be using electronic devices, which father allowed at his household. The second one was mother had a take your child to work afternoon where they did some kind of science project. She works for Pfizer. Asked father, could the child go? Father says no. And the other child goes with father, files the show cause. And then the third one was regarding some summertime where father believed that he had not been given the visitation that he was rightfully entitled to. But he was given his visitation. So all three, mother was found not guilty, and yes, they were dismissed. He did not appeal any of those, and he did not use that argument at the trial court. I used it somewhat with my cross-examination with him to show for the purpose of the attorney's fees argument. But they were all, she was found not guilty, because there's no evidence that he has been denied his time with these children, not from 2014 forward, and even before that, Your Honor. So they were without merit, and I think that does go to the attorney's fees claim. None of these were bona fide claims, and that's exactly what the trial judge said. These were really without merit. It isn't a loser pays because he lost. It's that these are without merit. We have to somehow stop the litigation and stop the floodgate. Single parent cannot afford to continue in the court system as is without help, without some kind of review of those fees by both courts. And in this case, the trial court, both instances, the JDR court and the circuit court awarded fees to Ms. Brown, fees and cost. And that's an appropriate award in this case because the judge took into consideration that those claims really did not have merit. There was no bona fide claim at the time of the filing and certainly no bona fide claim when we got to the trial court. And the Richardson case...
Did you have an escrow policy?
I did, Your Honor. I have asked for fees today because my client needed to be here so that we could respond. My client paid her former husband $83,000 last year for his interest in the house. And as the appendix shows from the transcript of the hearing, He expected to earn over $80,000 last year. He had gifts from his stepmother of $14,000, and he had liquidated some of his investments. And so he was paying attorney's fees to his own lawyer, but it's his claims that have caused us to be in court. And when the judge found they were without merit and were not bona fide, then that's part of the reason I believe the judge, as evidenced in the appendix and the transcript, awarded attorney's fees and costs. So we are also asking for those today because, again, we don't believe that there's any merit. This is just prolonged litigation. If the court had an opportunity to look at the massive appendix, the court would see the bombardment of litigation. And that's exactly what's occurred in this case. And we have to be careful that we aren't opening floodgates simply because a person's allowed to file a motion to amend. It does need to be tailored to a material change in circumstances. And that's hard to define. I understand that. But it needs to rise to a level where the court would find that it's in the best interest of the children to amend custody or visitation. We had none of that in this case. None of it from the beginning. I filed motions to dismiss, but it's only on my motions to strike both in the juvenile court, which was appealed, and the circuit court, which is appealed, that I'm asking for the award of fees, not only what the trial court awarded, but also the fees for today and for our preparation to be here today. This is a case where, as I said, I've represented my client since 2009, and we have been back and forth to court simply because father's dissatisfied with the court's rulings. So in this case, I would ask that the court affirm the decision of the trial court and affirm the decision regarding attorney's fees and cost, and also to award my client attorney's fees and cost on this appeal and defending the appeal. Thank you.
Yes, in addressing the issue of attorney's fees.
Let me stop. Do you want to address her issue about Keel thinking we're not going to reach the second prong of the best interest of the trial because she's simply saying that there is no material change. I know that you talked about it, but she's pretty clearly indicated that they've done well all along and that simply the more time is not the material change.
I am not sure where the record shows that they were doing well all along.
I'm offering what she's arguing.
Oh, I don't believe the record showed that they were doing well all along. The record doesn't actually show what happened prior to the January 2014 order that was entered. It is not in the record. It's not to be found in the record. And I think one thing that's important to note is that with the argument they have about the continued litigation, the first order that was entered in January 2014, it was the mother's petition that she was the one who filed the petition with the court and started that litigation. It was not him. The father only started litigation after the January 2014 order was entered. So all we had was evidence that they had improved since January of 2014. There isn't anything in the record prior to that, and I didn't represent Mr. Friedrichs prior to that, so I can't answer that question. The judge acknowledged that there was the improvement in that part from the last order since he had more time with the children. I don't think that was in dispute that they were doing better. But with regard to the attorney's fees, it's important to note that there's a discussion about the show cause motions that were filed. She was found not guilty. I think dismissing a case and finding them not guilty are not necessarily the same thing. This was a criminal contempt case, and so we did have a trial, and she was found not guilty. But there was an order that said that the children were required permitted to use electronic correspondence with the other parent should they so desire. So his petition, when the mother admitted that she wasn't going to allow them to do that, was not a frivolous petition by any means. She was just found not guilty under a criminal standard in that court. And so I think it's important to note that. It's also important that the reasonableness under all the circumstances in this case, parents are permitted to seek modification of custody orders. All custody orders are fraught with uncertainty, and the courts have always allowed parents to do that. But in this case, the father being required to pay $43,000, every single penny of the mother's fees, without looking through them or scrutinizing them in any way, was clearly just to punish him. It was very much a loser pays rationale. The court was determined to punish him and to prevent him from coming back to court to ask any kind of modification in the best interest of his children going forward. There were no delays or violations at all. The lower court permitted him to amend his motions. There was no delay or pretrial delays at all in this case, and it was never found by the juvenile court that that had happened. He noted his timely appeal after he had his hearings at the lower level of the court. The court didn't say that it did it based on the equities of the parties, but if you look at the equities of the parties, the mother's income was more than the father's income. In fact, he was ordered to pay $43,000 in fees in 90 days. That was half of his income.
I think it's fair to say that the court didn't say so expressly. It certainly implicitly concluded that this was frivolous litigation on the basis of the award of attorneys.
She said that, and she said that he had, you know, caused delays and whatnot. And I would certainly argue that these were his motions. He didn't want any delays. He was hoping to move forward on them because he believed it was in the best interest of his children to modify or amend the current orders that were in place. So he certainly did not delay. And yes, she did say that she said he didn't file a bona fide claim. But again, he filed his show cause motions in the lower court. She was found not guilty, but there was a trial on those motions. But his motions to amend, the lower court found that he did prove a material change in circumstances for visitation, but not for custody, which I don't think there's any difference in the Kiel case between what's considered a material change for one issue, but not for another. I think you either find it or you don't find it.
Your time is up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We'll come down and brief.